Now, here's Eric.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I am Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And that's Dennis Hallinan. He's one of the employee owners of Tab. Comes in and helps me out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. And we're very excited to have on the line with us here, Kyle Allspach from CRN. You there, Kyle?
Yes. Hello, Eric.
How are you, sir? So Kyle is basically at CRN. That's kind of the Bible of what we do in the MSP world. They talk about our vendors, talk about the industry, and Kyle wrote an article about CrowdStrike. And your theory here is that CrowdStrike isn't the only one to blame, right?
Yeah, you know, basically, I think that, you know, I wrote that sort of very early in the middle of this chaos, but
yes,
I think it's still basically true.
So what would be your point, though, that you were trying to make?
I think that, just, you know, I mean, the idea is just basically that mistakes are going to happen in these, you know, very complex IT systems. And, you know, it's hard to really say that a vendor for, you know, essentially doing what people have been asking them to do, which is to protect against hackers in this case. I mean, that's what CrowdStrike does. But any vendor really, you know, is sort of trying to fulfill their mission. And, you know, if they are, you know, being held solely responsible for, you know, something like this happening, then that, I don't know, it just doesn't entirely add up for me.
So it's funny, we already had callers on the show that are pretty much saying the entire software industry is to blame and the approach that we take and the operating systems. But your take is more like, hey, it's kind of like what we're asking them to do. We should kind of give them a pass. So you seem to be more of a, I won't say the word apologist, but you're being more nice to CrowdStrike and being more empathetic to their position.
I think it's also a little bit specific to the fact that they're a security vendor. You know, security vendors are a little different from other software vendors, where when they're pushing an update, there's a specific you know, security reason for it, which is to protect everybody. And you know, I think that is sort of one distinction that maybe has gotten lost in all of this. That everyone's familiar with, you know, software updates that just give you some new features or something. That, you know, CrowdStrike's update was not one of those. CrowdStrike's update was meant to protect against a specific threat that they've been observing. And so I think that, you know, given that, I mean, it is, you know, I don't know, I think they deserve maybe a little bit more, not necessarily a pass, but you know, they weren't just trying to do something to, you know, benefit themselves here. They were trying to protect customers.
Yeah, and we agree with that point.
Right.
We're just extremely disappointed as IT people in what they did and how they clearly aren't testing. I mean, you don't even have to be an IT person to realize they didn't test the update at all. So, you know, how would you feel now if you think about this? They didn't test the update. They break 8.5 million computers. And these are people supposedly protecting us from hackers. You know, to your point, right? They were doing an update to, quote unquote, protect us, but they were too lazy to actually release the update on their own stuff first, or even a test lab just to see what would happen, because it presented pretty instantly.
Yeah.
What do you think the excuse would be? I mean, how would you couch that approach to a professional industry? I mean, imagine if airplanes worked that way.
Right. No, it's a great point. I think that it's still not entirely clear, you know, how testing would work for this specific kind of thing that they're updating for. I mean, the one thing that has been mentioned to me, you know, is just that, you know, being able to test against you know, every kind of configuration that's out there would be sort of, I don't know, it wouldn't really be possible to get these things out quickly if you did that. And so if the point is to protect quickly against a threat that's just emerged, then, you know, the testing, I mean, it does, yes. I mean, certainly it seems like there should have been, you know, more testing that happened here. I don't personally know enough about exactly what that would entail in order to do like a full test.
Well, the beauty of virtualization gives you the ability to run all sorts of operating systems at the same time. I mean, they literally could have a lab with like 10 computers in it, all running a different flavor of Windows, and there you go. My contention would be that they test their stuff on their own production systems. Before you release an update like this on the planet, CrowdStrike, release it on your production system, specifically your CEO's computer first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What were you going to say?
Oh, just that. I mean, I think that, I mean, there definitely could be an overconfidence aspect to this where, you know, they do these things all the time and they, you know, they don't necessarily, they've gotten to the point where they feel, you know, feel that they're, I mean, basically what went wrong here was that they're, the, you know, the software that was supposed to catch when there was a defective file, that software had a bug in it.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't catch, it wasn't so much that they weren't looking for, you know, bad updates. It mm-hmm. was that they didn't catch the bad update. And so that's, I mean, that's sort of, they probably, if they had overconfidence anywhere, it was in that system for validating the updates. And so they were, I mean, they did have checks and balances here, but they just, you know, there was a bug.
Yeah. No, and I appreciate that. And I'm just getting to the point in my career that I'm tired of accepting it. I mean, I am just so angry in the IT field that, you know, when you wrote the article, I was like, wow, you feel totally differently. You're kind of like, oh, you know, this is the way our owner used to, you know, talk about programming. It's hard, right? Millions of lines of code and, you know, it's an art form and you know, things are going to happen. But at this point, we're so reliant on it. It used to be, you know, if a blue screen of death happened, nobody cared really, right? It would be a bad day for the IT people, but, you know, they actually released the update. They didn't test it before they released it. Nowadays, you're at the mercy of every vendor you're working with. Now, this was CrowdStrike today, but it could be Sentinel One tomorrow. It could be, you know, Huntress the next day. It could be, you know, who knows what. And these industries need to be held more accountable. So what do you think the penalties are going to be for CrowdStrike? I mean, what's going to happen with a company that impacted the entire planet? Billions of dollars impacted, millions of lives impacted. Do you think there's going to be any penalty? Do you think there should be any penalty?
I mean, that really is the big question, because I think that's, you know, when you're kind of, you know, dealing with an unprecedented event like we are here, then it, you know, it is really hard to tell, you know, where that's going to go. You know, I mean, I certainly think that, you know, there should be, you know, customers should be compensated in some way. I don't know if it's CrowdStrike that, you know, is the one that, I mean, they're not, I mean, they're a large company, but they're not that large of a company. So I think that, you know, if you just decided this was all going to be on CrowdStrike, then, you know, I'm not sure how that would shake out, because, you know, they're not Microsoft or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. They're like $3 billion revenue a year. It's going to be a fascinating thing to see how they figure this out, because, I mean, my impression is, you know, cyber insurance and things like that don't actually cover this. So people are going to be, you know, looking to get restitution somehow. And I mean, yeah, it is, it really does kind of feel like we're like in uncharted waters here with that aspect.
Yeah. I mean, business continuity insurance, cyber insurance, this was simply incompetence handed down on these people. So the insurance companies are sure as heck not going to pay. We know that's the case. So yeah, I mean, I frankly wouldn't be too upset if CrowdStrike got sued into non-existence. I would think they earned it. You know, Lehman was too big to fail until it's gone. What happened to Merrill Lynch? Somebody else had to buy them. When you make mistakes this big, you got to have a consequence. And because there's no consequences and there's no warranty. I mean, did you ever read the warranty on CrowdStrike's product?
I haven't, no.
You would be shocked to know that there is no warranty. The first line of the warranty says there is no warranty. And then it, in capital letters, in legalese, explains why the product you're buying, if it doesn't work as intended for any reason at all, we don't have any warranty on it. There's nothing you can do about it. And they actually expressly say, don't put it on any kind of mission critical systems like airplanes and stuff like that. Now, thankfully, we don't run Windows operating systems on an airplane, because, oh my goodness, what the heck would we be doing? But they actually expressly listed some of the industries that were directly impacted by this, who did clearly use CrowdStrike on their systems. But again, it says there's no warranty. You buy it as is.
Mm-hmm.
How can we in this industry, I mean, I've been in this industry for 35 years. Dennis has been in there a little longer. At some point, when can we expect quality? I mean, you guys are writing the articles about this industry. When are we going to hold these companies to the point where it's like we should expect some level of quality in their products?
I mean, I think it's interesting because I think that there has been that conversation, about other vendors, about Microsoft quite a lot over the past few years. And, I find it pretty fascinating that, their defense has always been that, well, bugs are going to happen. We've got too many different, platforms and things like that. I kind of have always, not necessarily bought that from Microsoft, because of their resources. But ironically, I mean, as we were just talking about, I did almost feel like that is a little bit more true in this CrowdStrike situation. When it comes to Microsoft, I guess it comes to when customers are willing to walk away from vendors, that don't provide that quality. And Microsoft has, hundreds of, vulnerability updates every single month. Yeah. And customers don't seem to be too perturbed about that. They don't seem to be walking away from them and, going to Google or whoever it is. So, I don't know. That's always what I'm always told whenever I ask people about that is just that, like, it's really on the customers whether they're going to, actually put up a fight about it or not.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Kyle Ausbach. He's the senior editor over at CRN. And again, CRN's kind of our industry paper of record kind of thing, explaining cybersecurity and the technologies that are out there in our world, and just trying to talk about CrowdStrike. So you think about, like, you remember the Pinto?
Yes.
Remember that thing would blow up if it got tapped by touched right in the rear there? And Ralph Nader came out. He's a Connecticut guy and pretty much held the manufacturer of the Pinto to the fire and said, we need better quality cars so they don't blow up when you get rear-ended. When do we think our industry is going to get to that point? Your point is well taken. It's like nobody's making a change. But the problem is, when I started this, nobody got fired for recommending IBM, right? We were doing OS2, we were doing Novell, and Microsoft and Ballmer comes around and offers this package for $99 along with the ShamWow. And here we are, and 25 years later, and we just experienced Y2K. Is there going to be any industry watchguards on this stuff? Because we're not getting any kind of consumer quality anymore. If you have we have a listeria outbreak here in Connecticut with liverwurst, and it's killing people. Now they're finally pulling it off the shelves, but Microsoft can bring everybody down, and nobody cares. Why is that?
Right.
I mean, you talked about the customers not doing it, but don't we think we need some regulation? And I'm a small government guy, but don't you need? We think we need something to give us some quality in these products by now.
I mean, it's definitely an interesting question. It's not something that I've talked to too many people about recently, but I think that it should be explored for sure. I mean, especially after something like this, I'm sure it will be in a bigger way. It's been interesting to see sort of at least the current administration's approach to tech seems like it's been mostly focused around antitrust,
right,
which is fine, but I do feel like in some cases, yeah, that doesn't really get to the issues that you're mentioning here and that we're dealing with here. Antitrust isn't going to stop something like this from happening. So, I don't know. I definitely should be looked at whether that, definitely seems like, especially after this, that definitely is going to be a bigger conversation. I also just wanted to say, sort of going back to, earlier you mentioned other vendors. I mean, Sentinel One, I did actually just speak with their CEO a couple days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, he made some points about this that I think, are interesting.
Yeah.
They're a competitor, obviously, to CrowdStrike, but he was kind of speaking to the fact that CrowdStrike is apparently doing these updates frequently, and just that he thinks that is, part of the concern here is that's not actually their approach. And so I think that's sort of just in terms of looking at other things to look at going forward. That's sort of potentially one of the other things that people are going to be looking at is, mm-hmm. Well, what do the different vendors do? Well, do they all have this approach that CrowdStrike, has used, or do some of them have a different approach?
Right. And considering there's no warranty on the product anyways, why would they have to do an update every 20 seconds? Right. I mean, the product is as is. It doesn't have to do anything it says it's supposed to do, and there's no warranty. So why would you constantly update it to the point of potential failure? And then you look at Sentinel-1 saying, well, we're going to update it less. Okay. How much further less? Well, we're going to update, let's say, every 6 months versus every six days. Well, clearly, Microsoft has so many vulnerabilities that you can't do that, right? There's so many 0 days probably in Microsoft operating system, it would make our head spin. So they're trying to protect us from the bad guys who are already hammering on the system, finding the 0 day vulnerabilities. So what's the sweet spot for the bad guys to protect us from the bad guys? And I agree, saying you're going to do it maybe less only means that we have less chance on occasion to be damaged the way we just were. You still got to test it. You know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess their model is almost to not update, but more to rely on you know, the machine learning and,
right.
and you know, the algorithms to kind of almost be more predictive about it. I mean, that's my understanding, at least. And I don't know. I don't know if I haven't sort of surveyed other vendors to see, you know, who's doing what here. But, I mean, at least as far as, Tomer from Sentinel-1 goes, he definitely is kind of pointing the finger at, their whole process, he thinks at least, is unusual for CrowdStrike.
Yeah. Well, it definitely burned them. Anything else you want to talk about that's going on in the industry while we got you, Kyle? Anything even in this realm or anything else you want to let folks know about when it comes to IT to give us some hope?
Well, I read about security mostly, so I don't write a ton about hopeful things, but
well, look at NoBefore. Are you doing anything on the fact that they let a North Korean into their network?
I haven't even looked too closely at that, but I guess nothing should shock us anymore.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But anything coming around the pike that we should be anything you're writing that we should be looking out for?
No, I'm definitely, as far as CrowdStrike goes, I'm definitely interested to see what happens whenever he testifies. I mean, I think that certainly was enlightening when United Healthcare had the breach earlier this year and a lot of the stuff didn't come out until the testimony, before Congress. So, I mean, that's kind of one of the things I'm going to be watching as far as CrowdStrike goes.
What about Snowflake? The fact that, another cloud company up in Boston, I think is where they're out of. All these big major brands put all their data out there in Snowflake and didn't even turn on two-factor authentication. The chief security officer of Snowflake says, well, that's what you should have done. It's not my fault. What do you think about that kind of scenario where companies are so callous? I mean, Snowflake didn't mandate it, and the companies themselves had their own IT dumping our data up there. There's really no cybersecurity involved, and they literally left the door wide open.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big question as far as Snowflake not, not sort of pushing their customers to use 2FA. That definitely is. I mean, in retrospect, of course, was a terrible move. I think that's a really shocking one. I mean, over 160, customers, were affected by that, had their data stolen. I think only a handful of them have actually come out. So,
I know, that's the biggest breach in history now, and we haven't even heard of all of them yet.
Right. Yeah. So that's lately has kind of gotten, has not been having as much attention on it. So, that's a really big one for sure.
Right. It was almost like CrowdStrike said to Snowflake, hold my beer.
Right. Yep.
But that's the thing. So, Kyle, I mean, you've been writing for cybersecurity, and you have this level of just idiocy, right? I mean, haven't we been in enough presentations? I'm sure you have, where people talk about the basics of cybersecurity. You need to have a complex password, turn on 2FA, make sure you remove people from your organization when they've quit, don't leave the actual account live and active for a software vendor. You and I have sat through those enough of those presentations, and Dennis too, to know this, but Snowflake doesn't turn on 2FA. CrowdStrike brings down 8.5 million systems because they don't test it. Are you not concerned about the fact that that's happening in this day and age? I mean, shouldn't we expect more? I mean, aren't we better than this?
Yeah, I think, I definitely think people should certainly, you know, expect more and push for more. I mean, like I was saying before, though, I think so much of it comes back to, you know, the customers, at the end of the day, they just kind of give in and say, okay, well, we have to use somebody and, this such and such is the biggest player, whatever it might be, or you know, in the Gartner Magic Quadrant or something. And,
don't get me started about that.
Right. But I mean, it's just not enough. There's not enough pressure, I think, on the vendors to be better, unfortunately.
Well, you brought up Gartner in the Magic Quadrant. And of course, CrowdStrike was in the Magic Quadrant up until Friday. Does those rating agencies like Gartner, Moody's, and all these companies, and Forbes, who says, you know, Silicon Valley Bank's the best bank for 5 years in a row until, of course, they go out of business, right? Those publications and those quote-unquote experts, why do we bother listening to them? What is it about Gartner putting somebody in the Magic Quadrant? Could it be possibly that there's enough marketing that CrowdStrike spends to get in that quadrant? Because if they're in that quadrant still, I would contend Gartner is useless. Period.
Well, yeah, no, it's interesting. I mean, I think that, again, I think it's just people want some kind of easy answer on things. A lot of the time, everyone's got a lot to do, and they just want someone to tell them who's the number one in whatever, you know, sector they might be looking at.
Yeah, I think that's the key. You just said it. We're too busy to pay attention, and then we shouldn't be surprised when we get this result. So. Yep. Well, we're going to put your article up for folks to read, Kyle. We appreciate you being on our program. If you ever want to chat with us about anything going on in the industry, we're here every Saturday morning between 9 and 11. Happy to have you. Chime in with us. Let us know. We've been doing it for about 30 years, so happy to have you. And you have an insight to the industry that's a little, you know, right there, and your thumb's right on it, right? Everything's right in front of you. So we'd be interested in your point of view, and we really appreciate you joining us on the program.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
All right, Kyle Allspach. Sorry, Kyle, of CRN. He's the security editor of that platform, and we're happy to have him here and join us on the program this morning. So we're going to get back to your calls. Feel free to get online, 860-522-9842. You want to talk about CrowdStrike? You can. You have any questions or concerns about your current systems that are out there? We're happy to help you. We're here till 11. So make sure you stick around there. Everything we talked about is posted over at computertalkwithtab.com. It's the name of the show.com. And of course, we're on Facebook. So if you follow us at Tab Computers, the Computer Talk with Tab Listener Network on Facebook, you want to be a member, just ask. And a great group of folks that are answering questions. Dennis is very active in there. So feel free to join that group. And of course, if you follow us on X at Tab Computer Sys, all the news will get to you that we talked about throughout the day. And I'm still working on my Facebook live broadcast like I did an update, and of course it broke it.
Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah, man. Just don't do any more updates. I guess that's our new advice. Don't update it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, I don't. Well, I mean, is that really workable advice?
Not anymore. No. It used to be, Dennis.
I know. I remember.
We'll be here till 11, so stick around. You got Morgan with the news, and then we'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we're here until 11. Feel free to get online. We'll do our best to help you out with your computer problems, questions, and concerns. And Carolyn alerted us to something that I wasn't aware of, but it is true.
It is.
And it turns out our buddy George Kurtz,
the CEO of CrowdStrike right now.
Yep. Happened to be the CTO of McAfee back in 2010.
Yes.
And guess what happened then, Dennis?
Well, if I remember right, McAfee software took out a whole lot of Windows XP computers.
They did. They did an update, which included a DAT file, the version 5958, causing very similar interruptions by damaging computers using Windows. So you'd think if you're the chief technology officer of McAfee and were part of bringing down massive amounts of computers back in 2010, you would have learned your lesson, buddy. But no. The harmful update paralyzed thousands of computers, especially corporate devices. Thanks, McAfee and George Kurtz. And guess what? George, 2 years later, establishes CrowdStrike. He leaves McAfee and starts his own company called CrowdStrike. So that's kind of an interesting little tidbit that I had long forgotten. But do you remember that time when it happened?
Oh, absolutely I did. Oh, it was a big deal. It was a big problem.
It's a big problem, all right, when you bring down all these computers. Looks like George is familiar with this type of stuff. And so it's CrowdStrike, but is it CrowdStrike 1 or Strike 2? Or how many strikes do you get before you're crowd no longer?
I think they've struck out already.
I don't know. It's going to be a mess. So we're here till 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online. 860-522-9842 is the number. I can't imagine how they're going to survive all the lawsuits that they're going to. I mean, you got Blumenthal breathing down Delta's neck, and Delta's going to be breathing down somebody's neck over at CrowdStrike, I would think.
Sure.
Just them. There's many, many other companies that were so impacted by this. So feel free to get online. 522-9842 is the number. As we wait for your calls, Dennis, you have anything you want to bring up in the technology news world?
Well, let's pick on another technology company.
Yes.
I'd like to go after Adobe.
What's Adobe doing?
Well, in addition to just changing their entire sales model from selling software
yes.
to making you subscribe to it at very high prices, I should add.
Yeah, very high.
It is expensive stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's very good software, but it's very pricey.
Yep.
They also, when you subscribe,
yep.
You aren't necessarily told that there is an early cancellation fee.
You're not even told, even in their EULA. Interesting.
Yeah, and that's been a problem. The FTC has been going after them for that.
Okay.
Because they don't disclose it uniformly up front.
Gotcha.
And I do subscribe to the Adobe Photography plan, which mm-hmm. lets you run Photoshop, among other things.
Yep.
And I can tell you absolutely that when I signed up, I was not told there is an early termination fee.
Gotcha.
It did not come up.
And what's the period you sign up for? Is it a year?
It's a year.
A year. So you got to pay for the year.
You can pay on a monthly basis,
mm-hmm.
or you can pay on an annual basis. Mm-hmm. But whichever option you're in, you have to go the whole year, or you have to pay an early termination fee.
Is the termination fee pretty high as far as a percentage of the...
It's based on how far you've gotten through your year.
I see.
And I would imagine if you're going to terminate during the last week that it would not be very much.
Gotcha.
But that's how it's worked. It's yep. prorated.
Gotcha.
Now, there's, like I said, the FTC's been going after them for this.
Mm-hmm.
The FTC's original complaint against them
mm-hmm.
Is now been released to the public.
Okay.
And it contains a quotation from one of Adobe's executives saying that these early termination fees are like heroin.
Yeah, because you get paid
to
not do
addicting.
Anything. Yeah.
And Adobe is addicted to them.
Interesting.
And it remains to be seen what's going to happen with it, but the case is definitely proceeding,
mm-hmm.
and things are not looking too good for them.
Interesting.
Because it definitely flies in the face of the law. Because
they weren't disclosing it.
Right. At least, Adobe would tell you that they did disclose the fee, but the complaint contains documentation showing that there were people that did not get that. So,
gotcha.
It's there for whatever it is. But, I mean, we complain about Microsoft and CrowdStrike lately, but you got to remember there's a lot of shenanigans going on all over the computing industry,
mm-hmm.
and it's not just those players. Adobe is a major offender sometimes, and
yep.
so are a lot of other companies.
The same thing in the IT services world, our competitors, yep. and lots of them lock our prospective customers that would like to make a change away from them into multi-year agreements that they have to pay massive fees to get out of. You either have to pay a huge percentage of the 3-year contract you signed up for. So even if you hate your current IT provider's guts, you got to still pay them to still be in support in order to get rid of them. And that doesn't seem like it's a thing that should be a thing, but it is in Connecticut, especially, or all over the place. We've got plenty of clients that would like to come to us, but they can't because they have been locked in by their IT provider with these long-term contracts that they have to pay these fees to get out of. And it's like, what are you afraid of? If you're any good at what you do, why do you feel you got to lock your customers into a contract that they have to pay to get rid of you? That doesn't sound like you're too confident in your work. But that's what happens out there. So they're same problem, both services and software. Let's get to your calls. We're going to go to Nicholas in Brookfield. Hey, Nicholas, what's up?
Good morning. How are you?
Good, sir. How are you doing?
You guys are going to be laughing before this call is over, but I've been having a boot-up problem with a really old computer.
All right.
Okay.
We're talking Windows Millennium.
Oh, my goodness.
No way. No way.
That's old.
Well, I just use it sometimes for a reference to look up a file or a resume. I don't use it for anything.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But on startup, it's asking me to put a, I apparently can't boot from the C drive.
Okay.
So it's asking me to put in a
boot disk.
Bootable disk, yeah. Your drive is probably dead, thankfully, mercifully.
I'm also able to boot from the CD drive, and I have some Dell Diagnostics.
All right.
That run, and it's coming up with the C drive does not contain a valid FAT or FAT32 partition.
Yeah, the boot sectors.
Yeah, either the drive itself is failing or failed, or the partition has been corrupted.
So believe it or not, there are ways around this. You can try. These are old school things that we used to do as geeks. So you take the drive out of the computer.
Okay.
And put it in your hand. Take the backside of a screwdriver that you use to take it out and wrap it. Give it a little wrap. It might get that thing to work. You can also kind of rock and like pretend you're going to spin it. Now, don't be too violent about it because you could crash the heads. But my opinion is they're already crashed. Mm. Or, believe it or not, you can stick it in the freezer.
Okay.
For a period of time. Now, there is no, unlike the CrowdStrike 15 reboot solution that Microsoft had, I can't tell you how long to stick your hard drive in the freezer. But you're just trying to change the actual physical geometry so that maybe the read-write heads kind of get realigned. So wrapping it, believe it or not, works. Kind of rocking it, believe it or not, works. You might even hear, do you hear a clicking sound when it tries to come up? Like a click, like it's not actually spinning?
No, there's no clicking, but it does say the diagnostic tools were successfully loaded to the C drive.
Mm, so then your master boot record could be the issue.
Mm.
But the problem is getting
telling
to
me, it's telling me that the drive may need to be partitioned.
Yeah,
to
it doesn't
run F-disk.
It doesn't see the geometry of the drive. Oh,
right.
You know what it could be?
Oh,
it could be the actual geometry of the actual BIOS settings. This is going to old school again.
Oh yeah,
the BIOS might have forgotten what the drive is.
Right,
that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, you might have to. What you might have to do is do a lookup on the drive model.
Yep.
To find out what the BIOS specs are for it,
and then type them in.
Type them into the BIOS on the computer.
Now, how would I access the BIOS on the computer?
When it boots up, if it's a Dell, is it F12?
Yeah, well, it could be F10, it could be F12, it could also be
Escape.
It could be Escape during boot. It could also be F2.
F2, yeah. So it depends on the model. You may have to Google that to see if there's even any history on how to get into the BIOS.
If it's a Dell, he's probably going to find that information.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not be on Dell's own support site, but there are a lot of people out there that have that kind of information at the ready, so you can do a search on the model.
So your BIOS, you may want to go also get a battery for your BIOS, because how long has it been since you changed the battery on that thing?
Never.
Oh my gosh.
Well, that's probably what happened to it.
Yeah, it lost the settings.
It lost the settings and it doesn't know.
Which
what I've been doing is leaving it powered up for power it actually to the box, not actually on.
Right, but
to have gotten me through replacing the battery.
Yeah, well, the battery is cheap. You can go to Staples and pick up a new BIOS battery, I think, still. Or you have to go on the interwebs and download it, get it from Amazon or something.
Or eBay, yeah.
But it's probably that your settings are missing and you need to rekey them in. And it's old school stuff here.
Yeah, okay. It is. What you might want to look for is a sticker on the drive. Mm. The sticker may actually say what those settings should be.
However, okay. there's optional settings, so it doesn't mean that the sticker was followed by whoever put it in, because it's not. Uh-huh. You can choose your geometry, and you can choose your sectors, and it's like sectors per track and cylinders and all this stuff that we had to put in way back when.
Right.
We had to tell the computer what it had. Nowadays, the computer can see it and just knows.
Well, yeah.
Right.
So.
Okay. So I kind of know what direction to go in.
Yeah.
Should I choose to spend any time on this at all?
Well, the other idea is to just take the drive out of the computer, to put it into a USB drive cage enclosure, yeah, and just connect it to your... I assume you have a more new computer, correct, Nick?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So just go get a USB enclosure, put the drive in there, and copy the data over, and then retire this Millennium.
Okay. Okay. Thanks for not throwing me off the air.
No, no. It brought back some old memories of... when we were really having
to I suddenly I was remembering having to put those things in,
yeah,
and the problem of the CMOS battery dying, and then you have to do it all over again.
Yep The good old days. All right, Nick.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yep, bye.
That's when computer problems were wholesome problems. Right, those are problems that were like, okay, I'm going to fix this part. I'm going to get it running again, and you'll be able to use your spreadsheet. You'll be able to use your word processor, and that'll be it, right? And the whole planet wouldn't come to a halt. Planes would not be able to fly. You just put the geometry back in, and the hard drive would boot, and everything would be happy. I just miss those days there, Dennis. Let's go to Joe in Berlin. What's happening, Joe?
Yeah, come back... talked with you a couple times in the past month.
So we're not solving your problem. Is this a complaint?
No.
Okay.
Well, I did the DOS search for the PST file.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
And I only got one file, but then I did some other searching and found out that they don't store current... information on the computer. It's the OST file that's at the Comcast.
All right, yeah, an OST is a cache of what is actually in an IMAP connection. An IMAP is a cloud. The data for the mailbox sits on the cloud.
Right, so okay. It should just resync.
Yeah, I would think that you just reconnect to the mailbox at Comcast, and you're going to have all your data.
Right.
Well, I go back to 2019.
Yep. How far
back? I don't have current email.
That's a problem.
I finally got it loaded.
Okay.
But I had all kinds of folders and emails that I sorted out.
That won't come over. Your OST is going to bring back your mail, but it won't bring back your folder configurations. Like if you had folders for, let's say, I don't know, recipes and whatever you want to have in your Outlook, that won't necessarily regenerate. You're going to have to put those folders back and put those rules in, because the OST is just the email from the provider. Your layout of how you file it is on the Outlook side.
The OST will retain that data.
It will, but it didn't in this case, though. I thought it wouldn't.
Well, it should have. I mean, that's what it's designed to do.
So
remember, an OST is also the same format of the Exchange Mailbox cache.
Mm-hmm.
And the Exchange Mailbox cache can have all kinds of folders in it.
Right, so but you're doing it on your local machine, though, right? He had to reload his Outlook, so his local Outlook lost this. So it should retain it. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it should. It should have retained it, there could be a problem with how the data was stored in the OST.
Yeah, I have a problem right now with
that data could be ruined.
Yeah, my own Outlook at the office right now is not indexing properly, so I have to upgrade to fix it.
Now, is there any way of recovering that? Because I had some emails that I was looking for and that I can't find.
There are tools out there that can read an OST,
mm-hmm,
and it can repair them, it can reconstitute them, it can convert them to a PST.
Nice.
I'm going to tell you that they are all every single one that does any of this stuff right is going to be a paid title. But if you search the internet for this stuff, you're going to see all kinds of free tools that purport to do it for you.
Yeah.
They do not do it.
Gotcha.
Okay.
You are going to have to go with a paid software title to get this done. Ignore the free offers that you see.
To repair OS.
Yeah, because yeah, they don't exist. Or what they'll do is they'll like recover five emails.
Yeah.
out of your file, and that's nothing.
And then say pay me.
So
now.
Right, and then you're locked into something because you've already done the work of installing it, setting it up, connecting it to the OST, and now okay, what am I going to do? Yeah, I'll pay you $150 or whatever it is. Instead, okay.
There's an OST file load on my machine.
Yeah,
but it has the current date. So
okay, that means it was recently connected.
Yep.
Right. So would it recover? Let's say a month ago. Stuff or
it depends. It depends on what's in the file and what's wrong with the file, right? There's some sort of indexing or something that's broken in the OST. That's why you're going to run this tool to try to correct that. There's a there's corruption.
Yeah, I come up with now that I've gotten my current email. I'm finally able to download that from Comcast, but. Yep. It doesn't have the particular files that I'm looking for.
Right.
They're all put into different folders.
Right. Now, we know. You may have to run that tool to see if you can do that cleanup. And Dennis is looking for the tool, I think.
What do I look for this tool?
We're trying to find one that we can link for you. I can see Dennis feverishly post trying to find a tool for you. We'll try to find one for you, Ray. But it's going to cost you some money.
Yeah, but that's okay. And now I have another question.
All right.
On my wife's laptop, she's having problems with Outlook as well. I think I've solved one of the problems, but we can't bring it up. Every time we click on Outlook to launch it, it's just brief. It's like maybe 2 seconds and then just stop.
Fails to launch. What version?
Office 21, I think.
Office 21. Is there a year? We're looking usually at years. Like, is it 2019? Is it 2016? Is it 2013?
It could be 2021.
Office 2021?
2021. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the last time was about a year and a half old.
Okay, that's current enough. That sounds like, again, like you've got a problem with the software that may need to be reinstalled if it's blowing up like that.
I don't want... repeat all the time.
I know.
Into my computer. So.
I know. Trust me, okay. I'm avoiding my own update at the office because I don't want to deal with it either. But yeah, it's most likely you got to reload the software because it shouldn't blow up like that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Joe. Good luck.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. All righty. Let's try to get another call in, a couple calls in here. We're going to go to Bob in Waterbury. Hey, Bob, what's going on?
How you guys doing? I listen to you, and I'm watching Fox News, and all of a sudden, all these guys that are running for president are going to buy $250 billion of Bitcoin.
They are?
What?
They're going to make it a currency and everything.
I hope
not. I know how you guys feel about this stuff. It's like that Bitcoin is the same thing as the blockchain or whatever, right?
Bitcoin is basically worth whatever somebody's willing to pay. It doesn't produce a dividend. It doesn't do anything. It's just basically greater fool theory.
And it does reside in a blockchain.
Yes. So somebody's willing to pay a dollar for it, it's worth a dollar. If somebody's wants to pay $70,000 for it, it's worth $70,000. It's purely based on speculation and FOMO, fear of missing out. It doesn't feed you. It doesn't house you.
Yeah,
it doesn't produce. It produces literally nothing. It doesn't throw off any interest.
The Kennedy guy just said, the third guy that might run, he's going to buy $250 billion. He's going to
billion
put it along with gold as the American standard. I'm going, how can that be American standard? Yeah, I guess there's a Bitcoin rally and all the guys are going there.
You know, I don't know what's going on, Bob. It makes no sense to me. At least gold you can wear around your finger. At least it has some intrinsic value. At least you can use it to put some metal together. You can solder some good components with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Bitcoin is literally worth nothing. It is not a
thing. Yeah, I know. I just wanted to touch base with you guys and just say what our presidential contenders are actually looking into this stuff.
Yeah, they're trying to get the libertarian vote.
Well, and the other thing is whoever it is probably just trying to get some attention.
Yeah, they're
just talking about Bitcoin because people talk about it.
Yeah, Kennedy's running out of things.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring that up. And, I'm never going to buy none of that stuff either, or an electric car. So,
well, I hear you, man. You do you, but I appreciate the call.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, Bitcoin. Ay.
I finally remembered the OST and PST recovery tool that we've used at Tab.
Nice.
Or should I say Tab has used with customers.
Right.
And it's called Stellar.
Nice. What a name.
So we posted a link to it. Yeah. Right.
And it's not free.
No, it's not free.
All right.
But it does work. I mean, I have used it.
That's good. Let's go to Ray in Springfield next. What's happening, Ray?
Hi, guys. Windows 10 File Explorer. I have several external USB drives attached. And on one of them, I have quite a few folders with photos and videos. On one of the folders, I can't get thumbnails to show, but they do appear on all the other folders on that drive that I have tried anyway, and not sure how to fix that. I've tried clearing the thumbnail cache. That did not change the situation. It's just, so far, just one folder on this one drive where thumbnails just won't come up.
Yeah, there's an advanced setting. You need to make sure that you always show icons.
Yes, I have that set.
And that's not working.
Nope.
Okay.
Well, that's what it's supposed to be. That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
It's supposed to work that way. I mean, come on. Next.
Well, I know that.
Sometimes you maybe check the other one, uncheck the always show, reboot, and then check it again. Maybe it's not holding the setting. You did that? I tried that.
Yeah, they told me to call and stump you guys.
Yeah, well, see, it's not a stump if the product doesn't do what it's supposed to do. It's just typical Microsoft, right? Clear that you've already cleared the thumbnail cache, right? Using disk cleanup.
I don't recall exactly the procedure to clear it, but a few days back I did do it.
Okay, yeah, they're supposedly you got to run the thumbnail disk cleanup. The fact that we have to even do this stuff is crazy.
Yeah. It deletes the thumbnail database, I guess.
Yeah, and then recreates it.
Yeah.
And I rebooted after doing that like they suggested.
And this is only on a particular folder on a particular connected USB drive, right?
Yes. I have a mirror drive of that, you know, backup. I tried that, and the same thing happens on that.
Oh. Copy. Well, thank goodness we're running out of time because we don't have an answer for you, Ray, but okay. We'll try to look a little bit. Do you have anything, Dennis?
Well, I did see an article and it goes over a bunch of things that it sounds like he's already done.
Yeah.
But there are, if you go scroll down, there are a few other things.
All right, we'll post that.
He might not have tried yet. So we'll post the article. You can explore it for solutions that you haven't attempted yet.
And then we'll be on next Saturday, okay?
Yeah. We can follow up with you.
All right, Ray. So we'll give him something to try. I want to thank all you guys for joining us on this Saturday morning. I want to thank Kyle Allspach from CRN. I want to thank Mike G for posting everything live for us. And I want to thank Carolyn for producing.
And remember, we want you to be geeks too.
See you guys next Saturday. And then thanks, go NetSpeed.